This is All About Living with Carol Colby. All About Living is brought to you by Gunderson Funeral Home Cremation Care, Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, Home Health United, The Medicine Shop Monona, Independent Living. All About Living with Carol Colby.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to All About Living. I'm Carol Colby. This program always available noon on Saturdays here on WTDY, also on carolcobyradio.com, Carol Colby, K-O-B-Y, radio.com. I think March is typically a month that we look at wellness and health, at least many kinds of organizations and people who are working with illnesses and diseases and life's challenges look to March to kind of highlight that. And I believe, if I'm correct, March is Multiple Sclerosis Month. Is that correct?
MS Awareness.
MS Awareness Month, right. And we're going to talk about multiple sclerosis today. It is, I've certainly been aware of the disease, but in doing some research in preparation for this program, I have truly been enlightened. We have two experts on the subject with us, and let me tell you just a little bit of background about multiple sclerosis and let them fill in between the lines. Multiple sclerosis is a progressive disease for which no cure has been found. Although we have treatments to manage the disease course, they are only partially effective, which means that some people's MS will worsen in spite of everything they and their doctors do to try and prevent it. Wisconsin, and this was really an interesting fact, has one of the highest incidences of MS in the United States. One in 500 people in Wisconsin are diagnosed with MS. Nationwide, there are more than 400,000 people and about 2.1 million people worldwide. So it is not insignificant. And the fact that Wisconsin has one of the highest incidences, I suspect, we'll find out from our guests why that is and what that means, and if that also holds true for Minnesota, North Dakota, and some of the other northern states. Our guests today are Colleen Hayes, who is a PhD, a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and her involvement with MS is researching vitamin D's role, and she has two major grants from the National MS Society. And Dr. Hayes has studied nutrition and the immune system for more than 25 years, and her study of vitamin D and MS has been ongoing for almost 20 years. On a personal level, you have many friends and one family member with MS, so you see how it plays out in real life also, Dr. Hayes.
Yes, I do. I should say a family member who escaped a diagnosis of MS, although she was on track to possibly be an MS patient.
Well, and that points out to the fact that it's not always easy to diagnose. It's either not noticed and somehow it escapes diagnosis, and so no treatment plan or management plan can be incorporated, or it is misdiagnosed. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. And before we find out more about your research, let me also introduce Shelley Peterman-Schwartz. And she is not new to this program, a returning guest. Always a pleasure to have Shelley on the program. And Shelley graduated, a little bit about her background, graduated with honors from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and was a teacher of the hearing impaired in the Madison Metropolitan School District for 13 years. In 1979, Shelley learned that she had multiple sclerosis. But she continued teaching until 1981, when the effects of the illness began to restrict her mobility. Well, since retiring from teaching, Shelley certainly didn't retire from life. She is one of the most active people and perhaps the premier example of living with MS that any of us can even think of. Shelley Peterman-Schwartz is probably a familiar name to you if you follow the newspaper at all. Her tips for making life easier have appeared in numerous publications, including the Wisconsin State Journal, Mature Lifestyles, Arthritis Today, Neurology Now, and Inside MS. She appears monthly on the New News on WISC and demonstrates products and tips for making life easier, all kinds of programs, including the Discovery Channel's popular Home Matters. So you are everywhere delivering your message and the challenges that a disease such as MS can incorporate into one's life and what you can do about it to make it the best that it can be. It doesn't take the disease away, but it certainly doesn't take your life away either.
Correct.
Let's talk a little bit more first about MS. And I gave kind of a highlight that it's a progressive disease. But tell me, Dr. Hayes, may I call you Colleen?
Yes, please.
Okay, Colleen.
Yes.
What is multiple sclerosis on a more complete level?
Well, to answer that question, let's start with the symptoms that bring someone to the doctor. Mm-hmm. And those symptoms are typically neurological dysfunctions. For example, some problem with walking, some numbness in a limb or a hand, some loss of coordination with the hands, a loss of strength, a loss of vision, a loss of cognition, neurological signs that are not consistent with what you know of yourself before this begins. So that will typically take a patient to the doctor and a referral to a neurologist, and then there's a process of trying to discover the basis for the neurological dysfunctions. And in multiple sclerosis, we don't know what actually causes the disease, but we know that the problem is centered in the central nervous system, where lymphocytes have made a misidentification. Instead of attacking some foreign organism like a virus or a bacterium, they have made a misidentification and begun to attack the cells that produce myelin. Myelin is a protein. It wraps around the nerve fibers and it acts like insulation on a copper wire, mm-hmm. enabling those axons to carry information in the way of an electrical pulse. So when you strip off the insulation, that electrical pulse doesn't go all the way to the end and tell the muscle what to do. So you have sporadic loss of communication between the central nervous system and the rest of your body because of this demyelination. So it's a demyelinating disease, mm-hmm. and we think that what's causing demyelination is the immune system, so we call it an autoimmune disease. Mm-hmm. We also think there's a genetic predisposition, meaning you can inherit genes that make it possible for you to get this disease, but it's not certain that you will. There are also factors in the environment that interact with those genes and either bring the disease out or not.
Like so a perfect storm.
It comes together. It is like a perfect storm. We're beginning to see that it's a multifactorial disease, very complex. So at the end of the day, the doctor will look at the central nervous system using a technique called magnetic resonance imaging.
Mm-hmm. MRI.
Yes, mm-hmm. MRI, and see if there is evidence of some demyelinating destruction. It appears as a white spot on an MRI scan. And also a full neurological workup. Sometimes they even will look at cerebral spinal fluid to see if there's evidence there for multiple sclerosis.
So it's not an easy diagnosis, or it takes a while to go through all of these processes.
It does take a while. And one of the difficulties is that this disease strikes in young adulthood. It's the peak of age for diagnosis with MS is right around 30. Mm-hmm. So it hits young people quite hard, and it hits women hard. There are 2 to 3 women who have this disease for each man. So it does show this bias to women that we're just now beginning to pull apart and understand scientifically.
I heard you use the word think quite a few times. So nothing is really chiseled in granite about your understanding of this disease totally, but you continue through the research to be enlightened more and more on
well,
the process of
Well, chiseled in granite is a pretty high level of certainty.
Mm-hmm.
And And we don't have chiseled in granite type of certainty, but geneticists who have worked on this disease for 3 decades have found some genes that are predisposing to this disease. The one in particular increases your risk about fivefold. Mm-hmm. So, and that is a certain, that's a slam dunk. Mm-hmm. We've known that for 30 years.
Why Wisconsin? Why the high incidence in Wisconsin?
Well, that is one of the puzzles that started me along the path that I have taken. There is a very peculiar geography to this disease. And the geography I'm referring to is the disease is unknown in the equatorial part of the world. And it rises rapidly as you move away from the equator in both directions. And that's been known now for almost 100 years. And the explanation for that latitude effect has been a matter of debate. So in 1960, a British scientist correlated that latitude effect to the availability of sunlight in the winter. And that was quite well-known work. So in the equatorial part of the world, sunlight is available in good supply year-round. Mm-hmm. But here in Wisconsin, we lose our intense sunlight in late September, early October, and we don't see it again until sometime around April. So the sunlight appears to have a protective effect, and this is true all across the northern United States. It's true across northern Europe. The highest rate of multiple sclerosis in the world is Scotland, with 1 in 200 people affected by this disease.
A country that typically is gray and overcast.
Gray and drizzly.
Mm-hmm. And what about Minnesota or North Dakota?
Minnesota, a high rate. North Dakota, high rate. Even Seattle with its cloudy, drizzly climate.
Okay.
And then if you look in the southern hemisphere and go down to Tasmania, you'll find a high rate in the part of Australia that's furthest from the equator.
Yes. Yeah, it's Tasmania's weight. I was there last year, and it really is. It's far south, and it's in relation to Canada or whatever here. So so you can find a straight line. So your research in the relationship between vitamin D and MS is critical to uncovering some of the mysteries or solving some of the mysteries of the disease.
It was that latitude mystery, the sunlight mystery, that set me on my way. Mm-hmm. And almost 15 years ago now, my colleagues and I here at the University of Wisconsin wrote a hypothesis paper where we suggested that sunlight might be playing a protective role because sunlight catalyzes vitamin D formation in the skin. Mm-hmm. Vitamin D can be converted in your body into a hormone, and that hormone can control various tissues, and in particular, T lymphocytes.
We need to stop for a break right now, and we'll continue this discussion. I want to find out more about the influence of vitamin D on all of us as far as our health is concerned, and find out from Shelley, too, her personal story of going through the process of diagnosis in multiple sclerosis. You're listening to All About Living on Madison 1670 WTDY. This segment of our program has been brought to you by Home Health United. You got a friend right here. Online at homehealthunited.org. I'm Carol Kobe, and we'll be right back with more of our program after these messages.
This is All About Living with Carol Kobe, Madison 1670, WTDY.
Welcome back. We're with our guests today, Shelley Peterman-Schwartz and Colleen Hayes, Dr. Colleen Hayes. We're talking about multiple sclerosis. And if you were tuned in prior to the break, you heard Dr. Hayes, PhD Dr. Hayes, explaining just in such wonderful layperson's terms, multiple sclerosis and the fact that in northern latitudes there is higher incidences of multiple sclerosis, Wisconsin being one of the states that has the highest incidences of multiple sclerosis in the United States. And you were explaining that it is a progressive disease, and you think it's an autoimmune disease, and it affects, it's a, it affects the myelin, which is a coating of the nerve fibers. And there was a description that I thought was really a good analogy, one that I, not knowing anything about it, could picture, where it's like an electric wire that has the coating around it, the protection around it, the insulation around it, and that's what the myelin does. And somehow that myelin gets stripped, and then the nerve fibers can't connect, deliver the proper messages to the right part of the body. Is that it? In kind
That's a good summary. Yeah. I didn't mention that there are two different forms of multiple sclerosis, broadly recognized different forms. One of them is termed primary progressive, which you alluded to, and that's a form of disease where the symptoms appear and they don't go away, and they can get progressively more pronounced, mm-hmm. and new neurological deficits can appear. The other form of the disease is called relapsing remitting. 80% of people have the relapsing remitting form at diagnosis, and about 20% have primary progressive at diagnosis. In the relapsing remitting form, the symptoms will come, and then they will go away. Mm-hmm. And then at some time in the future, and it's never possible to, well, at this current time, it's not possible to predict the when and if they will return, but in relapsing MS, the symptoms come again and sometimes more strongly. And over the course of time, by about the fifth decade of life, people with relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis will experience a change and no longer have remissions and enter a phase that we call secondary progressive, meaning the symptoms now grow instead of going into remission.
Okay, but I was reading that MS doesn't necessarily, it doesn't, people live a normal lifespan typically, or they can with MS, so it isn't terminal in that relationship. I want, Shelley, you were nodding your head, and when she mentioned primary progressive disease, that's what you were diagnosed mm-hmm. with. And that was back in 1979. You are now in a motorized scooter.
My little amigo.
Yes, and it is truly your friend, truly your yes. friend, and gives you the independence and life that you do have, allows you that. Can you go back to 1979 and explain the diagnosis process that you went through, and then you were one of those that nothing worked and you just progressively mm-hmm. got worse.
What first got me to the doctor was a, you know, minor little complaint. I didn't feel that I could fingerspell as fast as I used to. And so that coupled with the fact that somehow when I ran, my toe kept hitting the sidewalk and I couldn't not make it hit the sidewalk, and I thought that was very strange. So there were a couple of other little things, a little numbness and tingling when I bent my head forward. And so I went to a neurologist, and I said, I feel like a hypochondriac, but I'm going to tell you everything. And within 45 minutes and a quick neurological examination, walking with my toes touching each other, you know, one after the other, a couple of little touch your hand with your nose, touch your nose with your hand.
Yeah.
And he said, I think you either have MS or brain tumor. And they ruled out the brain tumor, and there were no definitive tests. There were no MRIs. There were no tests that could, and in fact, I don't think they didn't know nearly as much as they know now about the disease process. So, and what I did have is the 20%, the primary progressive, because every day I got worse. And it was very scary. Fortunately, my disease did stabilize, and I've gotten to a point where, you know, I can depend on what I can do and what I can't do, which is very helpful when you're living with chronic illness. I think one of the hardest things is that you can't predict good times and bad. Mm-hmm. And if you know what the rules are, you can play the game. But if the rules keep changing, and that's what it's like living with MS, you never know from one minute to the next. And I remember having young kids and saying, we're going to go to the swimming pool this afternoon. And then we get all packed up and ready to go, and all of a sudden it's like a sledgehammer hits you, and all you can think of is, I got to get in bed. I got to get in bed because I can't walk to the car. I can't even think about driving a car. And so it's very, it really plays havoc not only with your life, but with your whole self-esteem of who you are as a person. And, you know, you feel like you're letting everybody down, including yourself. So,
and you're married and have a family.
That's
and,
right.
And there's a commitment there, and you're worried about them.
Right.
And they're worried about you and wondering how is all this going to fit together and have any semblance of what you know as normal.
That's right. And as a mom, I think, and two-thirds, you know, more women than men, I have this disease. The whole tenor of the house is based on mom. If mom is doing well, the house runs fine. If mom is having a bad time, it affects everybody. And when we told our children, they were 5 and 3 when I was diagnosed, and when we told our children that mommy had an illness, that they didn't have any medicine to make her better, and that I would be having to help them have their help more often, what would you think my daughter's 5-year-old, her first question was, what? Mommy, are you going to die?
Oh, mm-hmm.
So that was the end of her childhood. I mean, not that she ruminated over it all the time, but yeah, she did. She didn't want to go to school when there were clouds in the sky. What if there was a tornado? Who would help you get down to the basement? She didn't want to go and play with friends because, well, I think it's better. Maybe I can stay home. I just don't want to go. And I knew behind it was she didn't want to leave me mm-hmm. because I might need something. My son was 11 when he started helping me in the restroom. I mean, these are hard things for families to live with and extremely difficult to deal with. I mean, it's no wonder that 50% of the marriages break up when a spouse becomes disabled.
What was your turning point? I'm sure it wasn't easy in the beginning, and you hadn't crafted this new life for yourself, living with MS, and then what you would do and the contributions you would continue to make. You were frightened. Did you pull yourself up by the bootstraps right away, or did you kind of fall apart for a while? Did you fall into the self-pity or wondering, why me? You know, what was
yes.
your emotional, psychological
yes,
journey?
Yes, and yes.
Yes to all of the above.
I had a lot of pity parties, and I cried. In fact, my daughter wrote a paper in college, and our bedroom walls, we shared a bedroom wall, and she wrote in this paper, and I never knew it, that she would hear me crying myself to sleep every night, and she would cry herself to sleep. As a mother, I feel horrible, and I'm trying to make up for it now, and actually have to, if anything, blame my kids for what I've done, because they were in like middle school, high school, and they were like, Mom, you have to get a life, because it was always there. I was available when they came home from school. I wanted, you know, they were my world. And so that was too much. You know, I needed to separate and let them have their life. And I really did have to find something for me. And that's when the sort of the teacher in me, I didn't know I had any of this ability. In fact, it took me a psychic to tell me that I was going to be a writer. Mm-hmm. But and then I didn't believe it because I had never written anything more creative than a grocery list. So I didn't know how this was going to happen. But, you know, one day the kids were gone and they were in school, and I was sitting there at the kitchen table listening to the refrigerator turning on and off. And it was like, there's got to be more to my life than this. And we had a brand new electric typewriter with 15-key erasable memory. And I started typing, and it led to many other articles and a computer. And so computers have made a tremendous difference in my ability to do what I do. And I just keep on showing up every day at the computer and piece of paper, write notes, and when I have the energy, I type them in, and eventually they come to, they've accumulated, I guess.
That's one of my favorite suggestions or recommendations. I mean, just show up. Mm-hmm. For all of us, you know, it's, and we certainly don't have, not all of us have what you have been through and have your disease, but it's life has its challenges. And if you just get up and show up.
Show up and do what you can for the day. And don't get the idea that I'm always, you know, happy and everything is fine. I still throw pity parties for myself, and it is not easy, and it's frustrating. And I'm a grandma now, and I can't be the kind of grandma I want to be. I can't help my daughter and son and their families the way I want to, but I'm finding ways that I can do it that are okay with me, and I have to be happy with what I can do.
Well, and you've created a gift that you can give by... You at some point did pull yourself up by the bootstraps and are making a true contribution and helping so many people that are challenged in the same way or in other ways than you are. So from all of us and everybody who is challenged, with a big thank you to you, Shelley, for what you do. One of the things with the MS Society that I noticed is that their focus is driving research for a cure, and we'll talk a little bit about the cure, maybe it's successful management, but also addressing the challenges of those affected by MS, because there are so many people living with it, and the research can't do everything. You've got to look at just lifestyle suggestions and behaviors and about dealing with it when it exists in your life in the here and now. We need to stop for a break, and when we come back, I want to turn back to you, Dr. Hayes, Colleen, and find out more about this vitamin D research that you're doing. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. This segment was brought to you by Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, where expertise with compassion is powerful medicine. This program is also available on carolcobyradio.com, Carol Coby, K-O-B-Y, radio.com. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670. WTDY.
Welcome back to our program. I'm Carol Coby, and we're talking about multiple sclerosis, MS, today on the program. Joining me is Dr. Colleen Hayes, who is a researcher at the University of Wisconsin, and she has studied nutrition and the immune system for more than 25 years and vitamin D and MS for almost 20 years. Shelley Peterman Schwartz is also here with us. She was diagnosed with MS in 1979, the primary progressive form, which is the type that just doesn't seem to get better or go into remission. It worsens and worsens and worsens. Thankfully, now she is stabilized, but thanks to her friend, her amigo scooter, her motorized scooter, she is a very independent woman and makes a great contribution. I'm sure you've enjoyed her articles and maybe her television appearances. She's helping people meeting life's challenges. I want to talk to you, Dr. Hayes. University of Wisconsin does a lot of research. All of your research funding has come from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, and they focus a lot on research to get a handle on this disease. And UW is a major source of that research, and you're one of many researchers there.
Yes, that's correct. We have several researchers that are funded by the National MS Society, and I am pleased to be one of them and grateful to be one of them. Every dollar that I've had for working on this problem has come from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society.
And the research is, it's very interesting research going on, and you are here today, and so we're not going to sidetrack into the other forms of research, but it's very, very unusual and some specific things being looked at. But yours is in the area of the relationship between vitamin D and MS. And let's talk about vitamin D generally in the first place. We hear more and more that it might be the miracle drug that was on the cover of either Time or Newsweek magazine many years ago. Is this the miracle drug? And we're all supposed to get more vitamin D, particularly living in the northern climates. So what should we know about vitamin D?
Well, you're correct. A couple of years ago, vitamin D research was named one of the top 10 breakthrough areas of the year by a journal called Science. Mm-hmm. It's almost like making the cover of Time magazine, but to a smaller audience. So what should you know about vitamin D? I think the most important thing to know is that 90% of the vitamin D your body needs is obtained through sunlight exposure of skin. you cannot eat enough vitamin D in your diet to satisfy the body's need. There are only a few foods with vitamin D in them, oily fish, wild-caught salmon, for example, being one of them. But 90% of what you need is coming from exposing your skin to sunlight, and then the sunlight catalyzes the vitamin D formation in that skin. So you can imagine if you're in the winter in Wisconsin, bundled up in a jacket and a scarf and a hat, and the sun is only low in the sky, there is no vitamin D synthesis in Wisconsin beginning in late October until sometime in April. So we call that the vitamin D winter. There's no vitamin D from sunlight exposed skin. So during that period of time, we can draw on the stored form of vitamin D, but that's typically going to be gone in about a month. And if you don't begin to supplement your diet with some vitamin D supplements, sometime around late January or right around now, early February, you're going to fall into what we call a category of being vitamin D deficient. And all the systems in your body that need vitamin D are going to be starved for that nutrient until you can get back out in the sun again in late April. So that is a very significant problem.
Well, then should we be taking supplements?
Yes, yes, because you cannot make it in the winter. Now, if you asked me that question and we were sitting in Florida, I would say, well, no, of course not. Walking to and from your car and the grocery store and sitting on the beach, you're going to get plenty of vitamin D. But that's not true in the northern climates.
And if we have sunscreen on, it doesn't penetrate through the sunscreen, does it?
Well, that's correct. And there are two forms of sunscreen. One is the form that you can buy at the pharmaceutical shop and put that on to protect your skin. That will block the sunlight that's needed for vitamin D synthesis. But the other type of sunscreen is nature's sunscreen, and that's pigment in your skin. So the more darkly pigmented your skin is, the less vitamin D synthesis occurs in your skin. So if you're a dark-skinned citizen of Wisconsin, the concern is even greater.
Oh, my. And so how many supplements or how much in supplements should we be taking on a daily basis if we live, you know, living here in Wisconsin, particularly in the winter?
Well, I'm really glad you asked that question because there is no one-size-fits-all recommendation. We had a committee, the Institutes of Medicine convened a committee to try to answer that question, and they attempted to answer it. And they published a recommendation at the end of November that was 600 international units of vitamin D per day for an adult. However, there are studies in the literature, for example, one done on Danish women who were Muslims and were veiled, and they were taking 600 international units a day, and they were all vitamin D deficient. So I told you 90% of what you need is going to come through your skin. Mm-hmm. So we have to tailor a recommendation to where do you live? What color is your skin? Do you work indoors or do you work outdoors? What's your body mass index? Because vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin, so it tends to be stored in fat tissue, and having an obese body is one of the risk factors for vitamin D deficiency. So I can't say a one-size-fits-all answer to you. I have to look at you and say, where are you living? Are you working indoors? What color is your skin? What are these lifestyle factors? Mm-hmm. Now, if you're in Wisconsin, and if you are, like me, working indoors during the winter, and if you have an average body plan, I can tell you that I personally had to take more than 2,000 international units a day to get my vitamin D level in my blood up to the midpoint of the range that we think is a healthy range. So I am personally well over three times the recent recommendation in order to reach what we think is a healthy level.
Well, I take vitamin D supplements every day, too. It seemed everything I read, every part of the body, we need vitamin D. Mm-hmm. And I know the risks in Wisconsin in winter. If we were to go to our physician and have a test, would that tell us approximately how much we should be getting on a daily basis?
And in fact, that's exactly what you should do. We also know that there are genes that influence our vitamin D levels in our circulation. So the best recommendation is to go ask your physician to have some blood drawn for you. I mean, you have some blood drawn and you have a test performed for the circulating form of vitamin D, and have your physician interpret that test for you, and then you begin a plan of supplementing your diet, and then you get tested again in about 2 months, and you find out what level of vitamin D supplementation you need to put yourself in what I think of as the wellness range. It's essential for bone health, we know that for sure, but some of the other, we think it's essential to prevent autoimmune disease or prevent disease from getting worse.
And that's why you're looking at mm-hmm. it for what mm-hmm. the relationship with MS, because MS being autoimmune disease,
yes.
what's considered an autoimmune disease.
But other neurological issues as well. There are new studies coming out about Parkinson's disease. There are studies about cognition and memory. There's a suspicion that Alzheimer's disease has a connection to vitamin D. So many of these areas are opening up. We know very little, but we are starting to appreciate that it's not just our bones that depend on this nutrient.
And thank goodness there are people like you who are researching it to find out and where the benefits are and what they are. Is there any downside to taking vitamin D supplements?
Well, let's be clear. And there is some confusion among doctors about the form of vitamin D. When I take vitamin D supplements, I'm talking about vitamin D3. It's the precursor of the hormone. There is also a drug that is the hormone itself, and that is available only by prescription. And no one is recommending that someone go out and get a prescription for that drug. That would be an untested territory. We're talking about vitamin D3 as a supplement.
So if we go to the over-the-counter to a drugstore and buy mm-hmm. vitamin D3 supplement form off the shelf, that's we should mm-hmm. feel safe in taking that.
Yes. Now, there is a concern that maybe you can take too much of it. Mm-hmm. So that has been studied well in the last 5 years. And we know that in MS patients, they can take 10,000 international units a day for at least a year, and the studies are still ongoing, without incurring any adverse outcomes, meaning there were no side effects from taking that high level. Now, that isn't something that is being recommended for the average person. That's a study that was done in multiple sclerosis patients specifically.
And what are you finding out about patients who have multiple sclerosis and are taking vitamin D? What is your research showing you?
I actually work with an animal model of multiple sclerosis, so I can describe that mm-hmm. to you. But there is just one study that has come out about multiple sclerosis patients taking vitamin D supplements. It was a safety study. So I have to say right from the beginning, it was not blinded, meaning everyone knew what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And it was just a year long. And it was only 25 people in each arm of the study. One arm was the placebo arm. One arm was the vitamin D supplement arm. But the extraordinary outcome of that safety study was that at the end of 1 year, in the placebo arm, 38% of patients had progressed in their disability. In the vitamin D arm of that study, only 8% had progressed.
That's considered significant.
It was significant, but again, the caveat is it was not blinded and it was not randomized, and it was a small study. So those three concerns mean that it did not meet the gold standard of mm-hmm. evidence that physicians are looking for in order to inform their clinical practice.
So what are you doing in the animal model?
So in the animal model, we have a disease in rodents that looks very similar to multiple sclerosis. And by looks similar, I mean in terms of the physical disability of the animals and in terms of the pathology in the central nervous system. So what we have studied is, can vitamin D3 prevent that disease in animals? And the answer is yes, especially in the female animals, vitamin D can prevent that disease. Can vitamin D have an influence once the disease process starts? We have not succeeded with that, but we have succeeded when we have used the hormonal form. And we can see exactly what that hormone does when it's produced in the central nervous system. So one of our significant findings is that when the animals have plenty of vitamin D in their diet and they have an inflammation in their central nervous system, the central nervous system tissue itself will produce the vitamin D hormone. That was not known before we started to work. The second thing that we've discovered is, what does that hormone do once it begins to be produced in that inflamed tissue? And the answer was astonishing. It goes directly into the autoimmune T lymphocytes, and it instructs them to pay attention when the central nervous system says, it's time for you to die. So we know in an immune response, for instance, when you have a cut or a wound, that the immune cells come to that site and they make a defense and they eradicate whatever foreign organism is there. And then what happens to them? Well, I'm sorry to say, their useful life has ended and they must die. In the brain, in the central nervous system, if lymphocytes enter that tissue, for example, to defend against some virus that might have invaded the central nervous system, and you come to the end of the immune response and you've gotten rid of the viral attack, what happens to those lymphocytes? They must die. So we think that the vitamin D system, in particular the vitamin D hormone, is the signal that tells those T lymphocytes they must pay attention to the death signals. So what we can actually see in the mouse when we go in and look at the central nervous system tissue is that within 6 hours of the hormone, vitamin D hormone, those T cells are dead. So this brings an inflammation to a close very quickly.
So it has a powerful positive impact.
Powerful feedback to stop inflammation before tissue damage can occur.
Wow. That is truly cutting edge. We need to stop for a break, but this is just fascinating. Our guests are Shelley Peterman-Schwartz and Dr. Colleen Hayes. We're talking about multiple sclerosis on All About Living on Madison 1670 WTDY. This segment of our program has been brought to you by Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, the Life Celebration Center. And we'll be right back with more of our program after these messages.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670, WTDY.
Welcome back to our program. We just have a few minutes left with our guests, Shelley Peterman-Schwartz, Dr. Colleen Hayes. We're talking about multiple sclerosis. And Shelley, your story of being diagnosed in 1979 and today you are functioning independently with your Amigo scooter. And you are in a motorized vehicle. You had the primary progressive form of MS. And if you would like more information, let me send you to their website, because it is laden with information about MS. WISMS.org, www.wisms.org. But there are also other events going on, and we want to plug those a little bit. Shelley, can you tell me about what the Multiple Sclerosis Society kinds of events that they have planned?
Well, they raise most of the money that goes to research. The biggest funder is the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. So they are doing fundraising all the time, and I am part of that because I so believe that we have to tell our stories so that people put a face to this disease, and we keep providing money for people like Colleen to do this fabulous research. And the MS Walk is in Madison on May 1st, and I'm actually going to be walking with my grandchildren.
Are you?
And our team is called Kids for the Cure, and I hope that anybody who wants to will go to my website, makinglifeeasier.com, and sign up to either walk with us or make a donation. I don't want any more children asking their parents, are you going to die, or worried about leaving home for any reason to go to school because they're afraid to leave parent alone. And I also know that now that they're finding MS in children as young as two, and this is impossible. You cannot have... And the bad thing is that none of the drugs that are in development or are available were tested on adults. So they're flying blind with children. They don't know how to treat them with some of the things they know treat adults. So I'm very, very hopeful in this time of our calendar and our years of understanding research that we're going to find some really good answers. But meanwhile, go to the MS Bike. If you can't do the walk, we also have an MS bike ride on August 6th and 7th, and it is leaving Pewaukee, going to Whitewater overnight, and then back to Madison.
Oh, how fun. There are a whole population of people that just love those overnight bike trips.
They're like 1,500 riders, and it's fabulous. Oh, I'm at the finish
line. Have a good time.
Yes. My little Amigo scooter doesn't quite go that far. And then there's a luncheon on June 16th in Madison, celebrating people with MS and raising money for a cure.
Well, thank you, Shelley Peterman-Schwartz and Dr. Colleen Hayes, for being guests on the program today. And so tune in to hear the program again if you like, or pass it along to someone else. And also, if you would like contact information for the Multiple Sclerosis Society, I'll list the contact on how you can find out more information. So again, thank you so much. I think the message is there is hope.
Yes, if I may say, we are at a point in research where we're beginning to see the convergence of that perfect storm, and that will let us interfere with the perfect storm before it strikes. And we're moving very fast now, so I am hopeful. And if I also may say, Shelley, you personify for me what so many people with MS have, and that is they have the spirit of still being themselves. They are not their disease. They are themselves. And they are active, and they are hopeful, and they are wonderful, wonderful people. So thank you for bringing that with you into the studio.
A beautiful ending to this program. Thank you both so much. Thank you for listening to All About Living. Thank you, Dylan Brogan. And now go out and have a great rest of the weekend.